Welcome to Fracking and Health, Ask an Expert. The Endocrine Disruption Exchange has been studying the health impacts from unconventional oil and gas development, also known as fracking, since 2004. In each episode, our Executive Director, Carol Kwiatkowski, asks an expert to answer a question on how fracking may affect your health. You can submit a question at tedx.org.
Welcome to Episode 5, where we ask, how can NGOs address health symptoms in fracked communities? I'm talking with Dr. Beth Weinberger, a researcher and public health consultant with the Southwest Pennsylvania Environmental Health Project, an organization focused on the public health consequences of shale gas and oil development. Thank you, Dr. Weinberger, for participating in our podcast.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
You recently published an article in Preventive Medicine Reports in which you studied the health symptoms of people living within 1 kilometer of a well site in Pennsylvania. Tell us what you found, and in your opinion, if this is enough evidence to take precautionary measures.
Sure. My colleagues and I looked at the symptoms reported to our nurse practitioners by adult residents living within 1 kilometer of 1 or more shale gas wells. And these reports were then reviewed by our physician consultant who screened out symptoms that had other plausible causes. And what we found, the most commonly reported symptoms that we documented to have started after shale development began or which worsened after it began, were sleep disruption, headache, throat irritation, stress and anxiety, cough, shortness of breath, sinus symptoms, and fatigue. And there's now a growing number of studies associating health symptoms or diagnoses and exposure to shale gas development, and our findings are pretty consistent with what academic and other researchers are suggesting, which includes upper and lower respiratory effects, neurological effects, and cardiac effects, among others. We didn't have infants or children in our recent study, but for me, one of the most compelling, concerning findings that others are seeing is poor birth outcomes for mothers in high exposure environments than those in lower exposure environments. There have been several very large and compelling studies out of the University of Colorado, University of Pittsburgh, Johns Hopkins, I might be forgetting one. But they're suggesting an association between exposure and a number of pregnancy endpoints like low birth weight, small for gestational age, neural tube defects, and others. So although that we did not address that in our paper, we're pretty concerned about that. You brought up sort of the precautionary principle or taking precautionary steps. There's no question in my mind that the precautionary principle is appropriate in these circumstances. Oil and gas companies are producing air and water contaminants with known health effects. We don't necessarily know the frequency, intensity, and duration of all the exposures over time or at peaks at every site, and we don't know the effects of the mixtures of chemicals produced. But we know that they're present, we know that they're dangerous at some levels, and we know we're seeing health effects that are consistent with those chemicals and particulates.
What would you suggest that NGOs and grassroots groups do to address the symptoms associated with exposure?
A couple things come to mind. Two revolve around just getting people information. We've developed a lot of tools and written material to provide people with an understanding to the best of our ability of their exposure circumstances and health risks associated with those circumstances. I know we try to translate some of the research, whether it's academic research or reports coming out of the government like ATSDR, so people can know, you know, get their facts straight and maybe collect their own data, like monitoring air or water conditions. And so if there's ways for groups to kind of bolster the knowledge base in communities where residents are really trying to seek out answers, And then I think that knowledge can be shared. It can be shared with healthcare providers or with various governing boards, from school boards to state departments of environmental protection or state health departments. On a practical level, we know that a portion of the pollution around shale sites is particulate matter, and their air filters commonly produce that pull the particulate matter out of the air. And so we've been strongly urging the people that we see in our Pennsylvania office to get the air filters that you can sort of move around from room to room if you only want to buy one filter. They're expensive, several hundred dollars. So if there's a way for organizations to help facilitate the purchase of good quality filters, you know, maybe for the people that are most impacted by air contamination, I think that would be a real service.
Those are some great practical tips. Can you tell me more about the Environment Health Project's health registry, its goals, and why someone would want to join?
Sure. The Environmental Health Project established a national shale gas and oil health registry this year. It's for people living within 5 miles of hydraulic fracturing and any shale-related facilities, compressor stations, processing plants, impoundment pits for flowback water, injection wells, really anything. We have a couple of goals with the registry. First and foremost, we think it will be useful to researchers interested in sort of the breadth of the health impacts of shale development. It can be used to develop case studies or case series. It can give researchers ideas about what they may want to study. We'll be screening researchers, so we only let researchers that kind of pass our criteria. We only let those researchers look at the data. And it won't include any contact or identifying information unless a participant opts in for that. And the good thing about a registry is that it can track symptoms and disease over time so that we can pick up diseases that emerge only after 5 or 10 years from the exposure, should that happen. The second goal is for our use of the data. We'll be able to report out on the findings from the data. Registry will allow EHP to describe sort of the whole scope of the public health problem to elected officials, regulators, and other decision makers. We think sometimes that people's health complaints are dismissed as merely anecdotal or the result of stress, and a big registry documenting health impacts and documenting exposures, we think will be a powerful tool. And we're happy to provide data summaries to advocacy groups. When the numbers are large enough, we could probably provide groups with regional data summaries or state level summaries. So it's something we're happy to pass along to advocates and other groups. In terms of participants, a great feature of the registry is that as people registry, as they put in their responses, they can see what percentage of other participants chose that same response. People really have liked that feature. So if in a symptom section somebody puts down that they have frequent headaches, then next to that question it'll pop up, you know, oh, 52% of other people in the registry also said they had frequent headaches. And we find that people have joined really like that feature. We send out a newsletter to participants with updates about the registry. We don't want people to feel like they put in their information and then we forgot about them. So we'll provide updates, and then we'd also be providing updates about what's happening in the research. A lot of people don't have access to the academic literature because they make it very difficult for people to have access. So we can provide updates about that. And it's just an opportunity for people to feel like they're part of something if they're interested in that kind of research. It makes them be counted among the people who feel like they're suffering from these effects. So that's that's kind of in a nutshell what we're doing with the registry. We're really looking for peer groups and grassroots groups and anyone to help us build the registry. We would love to have ambassadors kind of across the country encouraging people to join. And as I said, we just started this year, but we already have participants from 7 states. So we're pretty encouraged by that. Yeah, I think that's it about the registry.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your insights and all the resources that your organization provides and your time in recording this podcast with us.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I've enjoyed meeting you.
Thank you for listening. TEDx is a nonprofit research institute funded by grants from private foundations and by donations from individuals who care about our health and the environment. Visit our website at tedx.org for more information on what we do, to submit a question for an expert, or to make a donation.